Alexandre Lemieux, hello, good morning, and welcome to Your Public Value. My first question to you, Alexandre, would be, what does public value mean to you?
Well, public value, it's how we will reconnect the business world with society and its environments. And this is about playing in a new field where all three will be completely embedded. So moving away from the current way we are organized and governed. So it's a huge topic.
Yes, it's very right. And I think you are working towards this goal, really being the ambassador, one of the many, but a very loud ambassador, circular economy. Tell us in a few words what circular economy is, and then we'll go to what you call circular economy 2.0.
As simple as you can be, preserving the biosphere. This is the only objective a circular economy should have. So how do we invest in an economy that will focus on regenerative systems?
Yes, so you put in one sentence our ecosystem, our biodiversity and economy. And these two concepts were very antinomic even few years ago, even few months ago. So we see that ecology and this trend is now gaining a lot of influence, thanks to the kids, I have to say.
Yeah. So 16 years old, yeah.
Thank you, teenagers. But how do we put together the economy and the biodiversity? What's the role of the private sector?
Well, the basis of the circular economy is not to function according to flows of revenue against a service, but it's to function against how much stock do I have to increase the resilience of my company, and how am I going to manage that stock as flows of resources that comes back to my stock? So it can be a biological stock of resources. So how am I going to regenerate the stock of food thanks to regenerated soils on one hand, and how am I going to regenerate the stock of my, what we call the technical nutrient in circular economy? So everything from your office desk to your house, to your car, and how all these parts are going to return to my factory so that I increase the resilience of my company, because I know that the next car parts will come back in a very good quality so that I can rework that part for the next cars.
So in a way, the focus for the private sector is on risk management and on resilience.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, circular economy is how to best avoid future risk by managing responsibly your stock. And since I know you are in responsible investment, this is everything about that. So it's about understanding not only at the corporate level, but at the systemic level, because if you only focus at corporate level, you might miss the wider picture. But how much stock do we have so that the planet stays viable for everybody? And within that stock, how much is allocated to me so that I keep my the resilience as high as possible for my company, and I become this new visionary leader, which unfortunately are not there yet, but we need such leaders to understand that this is about quality of stock, and we're talking not only material stock, we're talking about biological stock, knowledge, skills, and this is where I emphasize with my work on circular economy 2.0, is that this is all about skills and knowledge at the end of the day. And if we miss those skills and knowledge, which are intangible, we might have an issue managing a circular economy well in the future.
Interesting. The circular economy, as we heard about it so far, was a lot about waste. And so how do you bridge this concept that knowledge and talents are crucial to the new economy when we focus on waste? I mean, talent is not really obvious.
I will tell you something, is that circular economy is about everything except waste. In circular economy, the concept of waste no longer exists. Waste is a linear concept. In circular economy, we call it unused resources. And these unused resources are seen as highly valuable. And so there's no waste in a circular economy. There's no waste in a forest. Everything is being reused. And the forest is one of the best and most advanced circular concepts. So waste is the world we live in today. Managing waste is a linear concept. Once you consume your product, then it becomes waste, and then you have to manage it. This is purely a linear approach. In a circular economy, you eco-design your product so that it becomes accessible and you become user in a virtuous economy, where you just access the service of that product, the function of that product, and before returning it back to the service provider so that it can offer the product again to somebody else. So there's no waste in circular economy. Well, at least
it's recycling. Well,
yes.
So going back to the same circle, that's what you're saying.
Recycling is also to me a very linear concept, because recycling means you have created some waste in between so that you have to recycle. Before recycling, there are other loops in circular economy, which is the reusing loop, the maintaining and repair loop, the redistribution loop, and the remanufacture loop, which is where you create more value, so more public value, prior to recycling. Recycling uses a lot of energy, and in circular economy, we avoid using much energy. So the lesser energy we invest in a product, the better for the circular economy of tomorrow.
Excellent. I mean, you are trying to implement the different loops before you get to recycling, which is the last resource. Yeah.
These are part of the circular economy strategies and business models.
Right. Tell me in few words what the main difference would be on the African continent and Europe, for example, or developed economy.
We are active in 29 countries, and the most active countries are Nigeria, Ivory Coast, Kenya, these countries. And what's interesting in Africa is that you still have the foundations of economies that do not have a huge footprint, and therefore there is still a huge opportunity for these economies to leapfrog into a circular economic model instead of following a linear model where we know where this would lead us to. So that's why this African Circular Economy Network exists, is to say, can we look at economies where lesser energies are being used, where innovation are still based on traditional knowledge, innovation are based on low technology, and where there's less energy used, but still highly innovative. And Can we learn from these economies? Because to me, the future is about this type of innovation. And circular economy is embedded in the African continent. While Africa might need a bit more linear economy approaches to increase its stock to become resilient over the long term. In the medium term, they would need to go straight into a circular model to manage that stock. But once that stock level is reached, they could circulate it in a clever way and think about it from now on. And I know that there's more and more talk about why Africa might be ahead of the curve and might be a circular continent before the others. And I'm a true believer of that.
How do the African leaders manage such a discrepancy between trying to take the continent out of its history and being ahead of the curve at the same time needing some investment that bring the continent backward?
Yeah.
I mean, not really, but backward in terms of ecology, I meant.
Yeah, in fact, it's a matter of defining and designing a new vision for the continent and for African leaders to embed that new vision based on traditions and belief that has always existed in the continent. So. And it's about being in that, as I said, in that pilot seat, in that leadership seat, i.e. taking risk. And this is a huge task. And especially with the pressure from China, with the industrial pressure from, the consumerism pressure from Europe. It's a huge task and it requires a lot of investment. But I genuinely believe in younger leaders, in startups.
I would like us to go to the circular economy 2.0 that is addressing inequality in the world as well as the environmental challenges. Please tell us what circular economy 2.0 is.
Okay, so as much as your public value embeds the society and the environment as active stakeholders in the corporate world, the same goes for circular economy 2.0. When I studied circular economy back in 2010, 2012, it was to me a beautiful concept. I mean, it was like, okay, we are going to follow the natural cycles and we're going to replicate those natural cycles. But when I studied it a bit deeper, I'm like, okay, we are still consumers and users in an economic world. And we need to see the bigger picture. Because if you tell me that this circular economic model is the next economic model for the world, it has to embed the societal dimension. It has to consider us as valuable citizens and as people. And it has to be an economic model. The economy is a tool. It's just a tool. It's nothing else. It's just a tool to increase people's livelihood, to increase well-being. Nothing else. It's about optimizing well-being of all the people on this planet. So in my theory of change backcasting exercises that I do with companies and other governmental services, I start from the end and I say, okay, we need to design an economy that works for everybody on the world. And it might sound utopian, but in 2019, we need that. We need to believe in a model that will take us into another dimension, and that dimension is possible. And so I by applying the concept of waste no longer exists in a circular economic world, which is the concept of circular economy, where we say, okay, there is no waste and pollution in natural cycles. Mm-hmm. I apply that approach into the societal world, and there shouldn't be any inequality and any poverty in the social dimension. Otherwise, the economic system is failing us. And when I look at the planet, I see biological elements, and within those biological elements, I see humans, which are taking a big major share because we are now soon in the official Anthropocene geological era. And I see technical nutrients. So I see these three stocks and flows of energies and stock of resources that are interconnecting between each other and moving us from 7.6 billion today to 10 billion tomorrow means there's going to be this dynamic stock of humans and dynamic flows of energies that are endless, because once you eat and you sleep, you are renewable energy. And the more I read, the more it is about designing an economy at human scale. We need to go back to the scale of which we were designed. And we just represent 0.01% of the biomass of the Earth. And we've destroyed 70% of its biosphere. So can we look at an economy which is low energy, which is low tech, which is based on well-being, back at human scale, which makes sense to everybody, and with a new governance, and that could be beautiful, and that could bring as much well-being as we believe in an economic world. So circular economy 2.0 includes the social dimension, i.e. includes a human sphere, where we also see humans as interactive elements and as people that needs to be valued in a world where there is less there should be less technology, therefore less reliance on robotics and artificial intelligence. We need those, but we need also to understand how can we increase the value of people, because they are there, they are available, and they could play an active role in the next model.
So this vision, in a way, challenges globalization and everything that goes to it. So would you have an action plan? What would be the first step? Because it means that the entire world, all the governments, would have to reconsider the way they function before...
It doesn't question the globalization. I mean, we need globalization. I share the same value, maybe not of my neighbor, but of someone living in Ethiopia or in Mexico. So globalization has good and bad things to take and to remove, but it's going to be a mix between the positive aspects of globalization, the positive aspects of relocalization of an economy at human scale. If you remove tax on labor, like X tax is suggesting from the Netherlands, all of a sudden you take advantage of 8 billion people on the planet because they are less expensive, while you increase tax on resources that are scarce. So you protect what is valuable, what is rare, what needs to be protected. So all these components and alloys and rare earth that needs to be protected. So if you increase the tax on all these components, therefore the manufacturers will take care and we make sure that we can recover them back into the economy and into the next cycle. And in an economy of repair and maintenance, you need a lot of human energy. Of course, you can say, but robots will take care of that. But where is the stock of resources to build those robots? So robots are good, but as long as they do not increase the pressure on the resources that we already have. And as I said, I see humans, if you take a universal revenue and if you invite humans away from a productive approach of the economy, but if you invite them to rebuild their local economy around human energy / technological energy / biological energy, Then you have a third stock. I'm not saying technology is not good. I'm saying we have the biological stock, the human stock, and the technological stock. And we have three choices instead of two. That's all I'm saying in Circular Economy 2.0.
And you also say that taxation could be a very useful tool to manage change and to get there.
Yeah, I mean, taxation is a tool among other tools. I'm not saying this is the only one, but you're asking me what should be first step one. So
yeah.
Step one, I mean, an X-Tax demonstrated it to a government for a government budget. They are back to equilibrium if they remove a certain level of labor tax, and if they increase some of the resources that are becoming scarce as we speak. So all in all, it's back into the equilibrium of any governmental budget as they are today, except that we can now unleash the power and the potential of the human sphere, the circular human sphere as I design it, and I design it with four strategies, valorization, the strategies we are talking now. So how am I going to prefer available energy, which is 7.6 billion people energy, and how am I going to design an economy around that energy? But the technological energy is still available. Adaptation is my relation as human with the biosphere. How are we going to change our behavior, to change the way we think? This is more like at the psychological, philosophical, sociological level. How are we going to envision a new world that will regenerate the biosphere instead of destroying it? And then the two strategies that are at the top level of the human sphere, where it's more about measuring advances. So are we advancing towards a well-being for all because of adaptation, because we have managed to adapt to the biosphere and because we have managed to value human values? And evolution, it's more like a scientific approach and more like a macroeconomic approach, where we know how much stock is available to make to keep this world viable, and the scientist research telling us how we should design the next world so to adapt to climate change and other challenges, and with that. With that perspective in three dimension, then you have more tools to play with, and more taxation system, more subsidies, more tools for the government to play with, and more tools for companies to understand where the value could be created. And there is a superb definition of what an authentic circular economy should be by Professor Borg and Ansperger. And this is very much aligned with what I try to explain in Circular Economy 2.0. They are explaining that an authentic circular economy should not be designed at the corporate level, but should be designed at the macroeconomic systemic level, because this is where we know where we this is all going. A company could claim to be circular, but if they have this narrow-minded view of not knowing what the next company is doing, we can all claim we are circular, but unless we connect together to understand the bigger systemic picture, and I know it's very complex, we might still heading towards the wrong direction. So circularity is not just at the corporate level, although we need to target corporates because they are the one with the highest impact. But circularity, we're talking at the systemic level.
Yes, and regulators are really crucial here. You may have followed that recently the government of New Zealand adopted the well-being budget.
I saw that, yeah.
What's your comment on that? Because we're still away from letting go GDP and the growth system. It's only a small step.
But before New Zealand, there are some countries in Latin America that adopted well-being before GDP. Obviously, they're not dropping GDP as yet, but Paraguay Foundation, which has set up a footprint system where they include human well-being and GDP is just one element of human well-being. An economic model is just there to as a tool to improve people's well-being. So if you tell me that it's about an economic tool just for the corporates to increase material circularity to save money or make more money, then it's going to be a limited vision, which is not going to fit to the challenges that we see and the challenges that you try to address with public value, whereby you can be as successful as you can as a circular economy corporate in Europe, but with millions of migrants coming from Africa and the Middle East, your circular economy will remain in the VIP sphere of European consortia and will never penetrate the entire society, which is what you want it to happen.
You know, people can be very overwhelmed because we're talking about changing entirely the economic system as well as their corporate strategies. What's your step-by-step advice?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it can be very overwhelming, and I'm also human, and I'm also overwhelmed sometimes by the challenge and the topics. But to me the best answer is to understand people's needs. In a linear economy, and I've seen it myself in the smart card industry and the telecom industry, where I spent 13 years of my careers before, where you have engineers designing the next product and then marketers and commercials pushing customers to buy the product. In circular economy, it has to be the other way around. You have to start from the end. You have to start by meeting the people and understand what are the people's needs. And I'm not saying customers here. I'm talking about people, just people. I mean, can I be and from a commercial perspective, from a corporate perspective, because we have to talk the corporate language, but as a company, you become, for instance, a one-stop shop for people's well-being, whereby you're saying, okay, maybe I'm not going to generate money on this type of service, but it's made to help you or to ease you get out of your challenge, current challenges. But over the long time, I know that I will generate some kinds of returns. Because circular economy is supposed to be this ongoing service. This is where the returns will be generated on saying, knowing your customers or your people better, because on every month, there's going to be some kind of returns in your relation that you have defined with the people. So understand the people's needs, and then based on that, create a flexible service. And one of my arguments in this next economic model is that we are not product based anymore. In a product economy, you design a product that you need to sell, and you make a margin out of that product. In a service economy, it's based on relationship. So if you do not consider your customer as a consumer, but if you consider the people as having many values and you need to fulfill all these values, then you are in a service-based economy. And the service means, even if your product behind the service costed you some amount of money, the return will be multiple people, from multiple stakeholders. So it's a long-term economy. And therefore, there is less pressure on the economic return, and you can adapt the service to the needs of the people. And this is what is interesting: is that you are in a being economy instead of in a having economy, where you offer a service, and if that service is of a certain type to a certain type of people, it would be different from to another type of people. But behind the product will be the same. It's just the service behind in front, which would be adapted to the needs. And that's what's interesting.
I think what is interesting for me too, as a takeaway, is that you very often repeat the word needs, and public value is about addressing the needs of society and the environment. So we are very much aligned here. I want to thank you for your knowledge and the time you spent with us to share it. It was really interesting. Thank you very much, Alexandre.
And thank you, Virginie. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.